Dennis, my partner and friend, a warm Naples welcome.
Thanks, Bob. Really great to be here this afternoon, and thanks for the really warm reception. You know, it's sometimes when you hear those kind of introductions, you wonder who they're really talking about, so I would certainly put myself in that category. I want to thank Bill Allen, as well as the members of the board of the Forum Club of Southwest Florida for the invitation to really be here this afternoon. It's great to have an opportunity to spend some time talking about some of the critical issues that are facing, you know, the global economy. I also want to acknowledge the students that are here today from the Barron County High School. Great to be with you. I'm glad you could join us, and I suspect it's probably pretty good that you feel you're starting your weekend a little early. So thanks for being here this afternoon. I am going to be talking about the topic of education here this afternoon, so I hope I get a couple questions from the students because I think it's really one of the critical issues that that we're actually facing around the world. You know, when I step back, I think it's fair to say most speeches really don't need any real introductions. In fact, what they really need is a conclusion, and I think many people struggle with that. So I'm going to do my very best to keep my remarks brief this afternoon and give you a sense for what's happening around the world. As Bob mentioned, I just arrived from India. Before that, I was actually in Germany and Russia for the better part of 10 days. After a couple of days in New York next week, I'm off to China as well as Korea. So it's really great to be here in Southwest Florida for a little R&R and a little sunshine, and thanks for the great weather that's here today. Today, I thought I would cover three topics. The first, I want to talk a little bit about the top-level results of PwC's recent global annual CEO survey that you have, I think, at your tables. Second, I'll touch on the key trends which are top of mind for CEOs from around the world. And thirdly, I'll briefly discuss what I think is a really, really key issue, and that is the lack of public trust that exists today, and importantly, what business can really do to restore that trust. So let me start with the CEO survey results. So first off, we asked the CEOs where the global economy was heading. And what we heard in the results of PwC's 17th annual global survey is that things are actually better today than what they were a year ago, and that's the good news. But we still have a long way to go, and I'll talk a little bit about that. We release the global CEO survey every year at the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum in Davos. In late January. So the results that you have at your tables are pretty timely, and I think there's really some pretty good information in there if you care to take a look at it. This year, more than 1,300 CEOs participated in the survey from 68 countries around the world. So it's a broad representation. In fact, about 44% of the companies had revenues of $1 billion or more, and half were listed on at least one stock exchange. So really, really good coverage from different perspectives. We've got copies, as I said, available here today. And if you want more details, you can view the various cuts of the data that we have either by industry or geography on the PwC website. I encourage you to do that if you have some interest. So here are just some of the highlights that I want to cover this afternoon and really talk about some of the key trends that business leaders are facing around the world. So let me begin. So 5 years after the onset of the financial crisis and the recession, certainly, the global economy continues to drift, still supported in many parts of the world by extraordinary levels of monetary stimulus and still experiencing an awful lot of volatility. At PwC, for example, we're predicting that the U.S. economy will likely grow around 3% this year, as well as next year. Europe is finally showing some real progress, signs of recovery. It's good news. Japan is also making some real progress, again, on the good news front. The emerging economies like India, China, as well as Indonesia and others, while we see their economic growth rates likely to be maintained at the high levels they've seen for the last several years, or even accelerate. But multiple risks really still exist in badly run emerging markets, and they're clearly vulnerable to shocks that are out there. In fact, if you think about just the last couple days, we're hearing more about potential trade restrictions that could seriously impact Russia and really what that means to the global economic recovery. According to the results of the PwC survey, the global and economic recovery continues to be fragile, but with immediate pressures beginning to ease, at least a little bit, there's a sense that CEOs are now gradually switching from what we would refer to as the survival mode to the growth mode. And that's the good news. CEO confidence about the global economy is definitely on the rise. 44% of the CEOs in our survey believe the economy will actually improve in the next 12 months. And that's more than double from just last year. So again, progress and good news. For example, in the U.S., only 4% of the business leaders surveyed anticipate a decline in the global economy. So again, pretty good news. That optimism is also evidence in how CEOs view their prospects within their own companies. And what's really interesting here is that the CEOs are more optimistic about the global economy than with their own company's growth rates over the next 12 months. And I found this to be pretty remarkable when you think about it. Said another way, why would so many CEOs be more confident in the global economy than in their own short-term revenue growth? And I'll return to that thought in just a minute. Nearly 40% of the CEOs we surveyed said that they are very confident that their company's revenues will actually grow in 2014. And that's up from 36% last year, though still way down from 52% in 2007 prior to the financial crisis. And of course, CEO confidence is heavily influenced by where the companies are actually located. CEOs in the Middle East, for example, were the most confident, with nearly 70% stating they were very confident of short-term growth. And that's contrasted to CEOs in Western Europe, where 30%, which happens to be the lowest in our survey, said they were confident of revenue growth. However, on the positive side, this is up from 22% from a year ago, again indicating progress in terms of their outlook. On a country level, CEOs were very confident of short-term growth, including the U.S. at 36%, which is up from 30% last year, China at 48%, which is up from about 40% last year, and India at 49%, which is actually down from 63%. You know, and I step back and look at some of these results, I think it's pretty interesting that when you compare it to last year, the advanced economies were actually struggling, as we all know. U.S., Europe, for example, while the emerging economies were actually surging. This year, what we discovered in the CEO survey is exactly the opposite. The advanced economies are mending, while growth in some of the emerging economies is actually decelerating. And when we look at industry sectors, CEOs are most confident about their company revenue growth over the next 12 months came from hospitality and leisure, banking and capital markets, as well as retail. So overall, I think there's some really good news. The changes CEOs are making within their organizations, we now believe have more to do about focusing on the future and less about trying to deal with the past recession that many have experienced. CEOs are actually feeling good about hiring plans. I think that's good news. And they're actually planning to add real staff to their headcounts this year. This number is about 60% in the U.S., which areas looking more positive include jobs in technology as well as business services. Nearly two-thirds of the CEOs actually are, though, concerned about finding the right people. And that's the highest we've ever seen in the survey since we've been doing it. And that's a significant issue that many CEOs continue to focus on. And when you think about that just for a minute, it's a bit of a paradox. So many countries around the world struggle with high levels of unemployment. CEOs say that they're growing more anxious about the lack of talent and, more importantly, the ability to put the right people in the right places, which is a real issue that I'll come to again later. So in considering the company's prospects for the future, we asked the CEOs what's actually holding them back. And interestingly, overregulation topped the list. This was actually cited by three-quarters of the respondents. In fact, this year, for the very first time, worries about the impact of regulation actually overtook economic concerns. So a real concern about what's happening from a regulatory environment around the world. And I think this high level of concern about regulatory issues also helps to explain why CEOs seem to be more optimistic about the global economy versus about their own company's prospects. More evidence comes from the fact that nearly 80% of the CEOs said regulation had increased their costs, probably not much of a surprise, and 40% said regulation had actually inhibited their company from pursuing new business or to innovate. So a real issue that they're struggling with. Also, maybe not a surprise, the ability of debt-laden governments to tackle soaring deficits continues to be one of the biggest issues, concerns that are facing CEOs today. 70% of the CEOs cite this as one of their top concerns. Again, this is the highest we've ever seen in the survey since we've been doing it. And what's really interesting about this is that 90% of the CEOs in the U.S. believe this is the most critical issue facing business today, and that is the highest of any country in the world. Again, maybe not a surprise. So when you think about the unclear regulatory impact on their business and concerned about the government's inability to address growing deficits, it's no wonder that CEOs are placing their hopes on the prospects for a global economy, while hesitating when predicting their own company's short-term revenue growth. CEOs are certainly challenged to decipher some of the very mixed signals about the global economy. Our findings show that nearly a third are focused on opportunities for growth in countries where they already do business, with just 14% planning to explore new geographic markets. Many are also revising their portfolio of overseas markets, and where they actually concentrate their efforts for the years in the future. And when you think about it, the CEOs from the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, when you think about those countries, they've really evolved on an individual basis, no longer as a single block. And that's a really interesting development when you think about it, and an observation that really came through and echoed by the CEOs who operate in the BRIC countries. In terms of very confident over the next 12 months for revenue growth, all of the CEOs in those countries actually predicted a decrease in growth with the exception of CEOs from China, a pretty interesting finding. As a result, many CEOs are now assessing prospects for new business beyond the BRICS, moving in different directions, countries like Indonesia, Myanmar, Turkey, Thailand, as well as Vietnam. So with that, let me turn to a second topic, which covers some of the key trends which are on top of minds of the CEOs today. And I think it's fair to say that CEOs are actually anticipating a number of seismic shifts that are on the horizon that they're trying to wrestle with and deal with. In fact, we would say they're focused on three big trends that will actually transform their businesses over the next 5 years. The first, technology advances. Second, demographic fluctuations. And third, global shifts in the economic power base that goes forward in the years to come. Now, I would say we all know that these trends are not new. But really what has changed is the pace at which they're unfolding and the way they're colliding, to create a completely different environment that businesses have to deal with to be successful. You can't continue to think about the world as the same as it was just 5 years ago. It's incredibly different now today. In fact, it's even changed in a very dramatic way from just 5 months ago, 5 weeks ago, or for that matter, even 5 days ago. Just think about the current crisis that exists in Ukraine and the threats of trade and financial sanctions against Russia and the impact that this could have on, as Russia really thinks about those challenges and retaliates against Europe, just as one minor example of what could happen. Think about the potential implications of that as it relates to the economic recovery that seems to be on the right track at this point in time. For CEOs, this business environment translates into, actually, we would say, building an airplane while it's flying or navigating the perfect storms that seem to appear out of nowhere. The changes that we're seeing are bigger, they're bolder and broader in scope than what we've ever seen before. And for business leaders, this environment can be summed up by, I think, a great quote from Catherine, the Empress of Russia. And it goes, "A mighty wind is coming that gives you either imagination or a headache." And I would probably amend it just a little bit to say the wind will give you not only a headache and imagination, but also some great opportunities as well. So let me take a bit of a deeper dive into each one of these mega trends. First, technological advances. Think about this one. The telephone took 76 years to reach just half of U.S. households. The smartphone actually reached the same level of penetration in less than a decade. By 2020, there will be seven times more networked devices than there are people in the world. And of course, the tech-savvy consumers want to share information electronically. Think about this one. Facebook's membership at 1.19 billion is now nearly as big as the population of India. The digital revolution has already put more power in the hands of more people than ever before. Yet the majority of huge populations in Asia or Africa have yet to establish an online presence. Pretty remarkable when you think about it. Entire new industries are being created, which could have a significant impact on the size as well as the shape of the world's manufacturing and high-tech sectors, as well as companies that operate within them. But there's a growing gap between what we would call aspiration and real action. According to our CEO survey, only 28% of the CEOs have made any headway or come to grips with big data, and only 35% are altering their technology investments in a substantive way. And almost two-thirds think their R&D function is insufficiently prepared to capitalize on the trends that they're now transforming their businesses. So you might say, what's holding CEOs back if these are the trends that are right in front of them? Well, I think there's a number of issues and challenges that really have to be dealt with. First, one factor is the concern that really exists is by the time they really get focused on and make an investment, even newer technology could negate their efforts. Nearly half the CEOs are worried about the speed in which technology is advancing, and getting on the wrong side has major consequences. Witness the diverging fortunes of Blu-ray or HD DVD formats. Many companies are also unsure about actually how to use the data that they're collecting. And what we're observing is that the truly leading innovators don't try to do everything themselves. On the contrary, they collaborate extensively with a wide range of partners, both inside as well as outside their industries. Some companies are actually redefining the skills they require as they redefine the businesses that they're actually in. And to me, Google is a good case in point. It normally works with other technology companies, but now they're seeking a partner in the auto industry just to help deal with the driverless cars that are on the road. The bottom line, as companies look to leverage technology, CEOs face the prospect of complex challenges associated with creating new business models and embracing radically different modes of operation. The second megatrend I want to touch on deals with a huge impact related to the demographic shifts. The global population, as we all know, will hit about 8 billion people by 2025. But this growth clearly won't be uniform, since declining fertility rates will hit some countries much harder than others. And while the working age population has already fallen in places like Germany, India will add nearly 1 million workers, that's right, 1 million workers to its labor force every month for the next 20 years. So in just 6 years from now, 2020, the median age will be 43 in Europe, 38 in the United States, 29 in India, and consider this. In Africa, the median age will be just 20 years of age. Explosive population growth in some areas against declines in other countries contribute to everything and shifts from economic power to resource scarcity to changes in societal norms. Demographic shifts caused by slow or no population growth in some countries are cause of massive redistribution of the world's workforce. And so, as we all know, work is what generates wealth. Business leaders believe that that will have a huge bearing on the future consumption patterns as well. Useful, growing populations obviously have to be fed, they have to be housed, educated, and employed for productive potential to be realized. So the final megatrend I want to touch on deals with the global shifts in economic power. The shifting of the global economic balance from developed to developing territories is already having a significant impact on where companies actually pursue growth, both for companies as well as PwC. For example, today at PwC, we get about 20% of our revenue from the emerging markets, and just in the next 5 years, that amount will double to about 40%. So a significant shift in where the business of PwC will be located in the years to come. This decade will likely be the tipping point in the fundamental long-term economic rebalancing as emerging markets, as we now call them, continue to expand their global reach. Last year, for example, countries ranked in order of GDP were the United States, China, Japan, Germany, and France. Just 6 years from now, we expect China to be the leader, not a surprise, followed by the U.S., India, Japan, and Brazil. China supersedes the United States, and India and Brazil join the top five, replacing Germany and France. So an historic realignment of the global economic and business activity is transitioning from what we formerly called the emerging markets, from centers of labor or production to really consumption-based economies. The world is getting wealthier, and consumers are evolving in different ways in different markets, particularly in Asia as well as Africa. And that's creating all sorts of new opportunities, particularly for companies and sectors where the richer consumers typically spend their money, such as culture, recreation, services, as well as healthcare. And if this wasn't challenging enough, the shift in the balance of global economic power is making it easier, easier, for emerging market competitors to fight for the same consumers that mature market companies are targeting. And that helps to explain why CEOs we surveyed are really nervous about new market entrants. CEOs have been quick to adapt to the geographical shift in the customer base. In fact, 6 of the 10 overseas markets in which they expect to generate most growth over the next 12 months are actually coming from the emerging markets. Creating customized products and services for clearly developed demographic clusters isn't new. We all know that. But the global trends are clearly up in the ante that business has to deal with, as the size, the location, tastes of different consumer segments evolve in very, very significant and maybe different ways. Bottom line, these global shifts are transforming long-held business practices as well as human capital strategies. It's no longer just about meeting the immediate needs of the current customers as well as clients. CEOs are challenged to anticipate the future, where to establish a beachhead today in an emerging market so that they are positioned to reap a real competitive advantage several years down the road. So to sum up, the megatrends the CEOs identified, the technology advances, demographic changes, and the global economic shifts will continue to generate enormous change over the next couple decades. And the interplay between these trends will be as significant as the trends themselves. Together, they're going to create many new opportunities for innovation and growth, but they also raise the level of complexity and drive many of the new challenges that CEOs are going to have to deal with. Where people live and work, how they live and work, the social and political context in which they live and work, everything's in a real state of flux. In fact, incremental aspirations simply won't suffice. It's clear that to address the implications of these complex megatrends, education must work with business. Governments have to work with business. Governments have to work with all institutions. They all must work together to tackle these complex and interrelated issues. How else can you really resolve something as far-reaching as youth unemployment around the world today? So this leads me to my final point, one that I believe is a real issue on CEOs' minds today, and that is the lack of trust in society. Without question, the loss of trust is a serious consequence coming out of the financial crisis. And we all know that trust, or lack thereof, is certainly not limited to the business world. There's a growing gap of the lack of trust in society as a whole. You think about data security breaches, concerns about government spying, loss of confidence in products, and quite frankly, the list can go on and on and on. And not surprisingly, when the subject turns to trust, CEOs in our survey specifically targeted the decline in trust among governments as well as regulators, a breakdown they believe creates uncertainty and subsequently puts a real brake on the overall economic recovery. To restore trust in business, 3/4 of the CEOs pointed to the need for more transparency and increased reporting on non-financial data that they believe is essential to bring long-term success. For example, providing data and examples of social and economic as well as environmental developments that provide a much more balanced picture of the company itself is essential. Many CEOs contend there's currently too much focus on the short term, specifically when it comes to financial metrics. But the real issue here is getting investors to understand and maybe appreciate the balanced picture of a company. And of course, this won't be easy. Indeed, our research revealed that while 70% of the CEOs agree that by measuring and reporting total non-financial impacts contributed to long-term success, only 35% of the investors considered non-financial information important when making their investment decisions. But there's no question that business with a high degree of trust and a clearly stated purpose will survive crises much more effectively than those with low degrees of trust. And by purpose, I mean a statement that clearly defines what they stand for, basically why they exist as a company, and what their moral compass is really all about. A purpose understood by everyone in the company helps management understand the trade-offs between different strategies and guides them in making, as well as their people in accepting the decisions made in the best interest of all stakeholders. We believe that a clearly stated and transparent purpose, together with guiding principles and actions to support the purpose, would be a start to rebuilding trust in business and thus society as a whole. Now, this may sound like an oversimplified solution to a complex problem. Well, it's not. By defining a company's purpose, while it's certainly an actionable first step and harder than you might imagine, this is clearly a key for that much-needed journey to reclaim that loss in public trust. So in conclusion, I've covered some highlights of the PwC's 17th Annual Global CEO Survey, hopefully shared a couple thoughts regarding some of the big trends that company leaders are really dealing with today, both not only now but also into the future. And I think there's really some good news out there. The changes CEOs are making within their organizations clearly have less to do with simply surviving the financial crisis and now seem to be shifting to opportunities for growth and really focused on the future and looking to clear obstacles that are in front of them. Maybe it's not all great news, but certainly better than we were a year ago. The more than doubling of the number of CEOs who believe that the global economy will actually improve in the next 12 months is definitely encouraging. Yet beyond the immediate concerns about overregulations, CEOs see a whole host of new challenges that are right on the horizon, driven by technological advances, demographic changes, as well as the shifts in economic power. And yes, quite frankly, they exist. They admit that they're not as prepared for these challenges as they need to be. As for PwC, in this ever-evolving, ever-accelerating business environment, we'll continue to be challenged by and anticipate the needs for our clients. But we at PwC are guided by our purpose, and that is to build trust in society and solve important problems. Our clients, as well as our people, expect and deserve no less. As I would tell our high school visitors, as they start to think about the challenges that are in front of them and they think about their college as well as a career, despite all of this uncertainty, or maybe perhaps because of it, this is the most exciting time to join our profession. The future is really uncharted, the way we see it. I mentioned the impact of technology, the need for speed. Bottom line, we survive, exist, by bringing innovative new client services that are actually essential to our continued growth, and I would add relevance to that as well. As the global economy shifts, we create tremendous opportunities. There's no question with the right skills and desire, you can build a very satisfying, and for that matter, a very important and successful career. As Bob mentioned, PwC has come a long way since he retired over 20 years ago. Now, can I predict where the next 20, or for that matter, even the next 5 will take us? Well, I think the answer is absolutely not. But the more I think about it, the more I have to believe that the great Yogi from New York was right on the mark when he said, "You know, when you come to that fork in the road, you have to take it." So great advice from an old sage. Thanks again for your hospitality and your attention this afternoon, and I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Dennis, thank you very much for that global outlook. We have a couple books here for your home, and as soon as it's finished, display those on Naples.
Perfect.
And Marco Island.
Good. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks again.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I believe Bob has a number of questions.
Okay. They cover the waterfront. How much influence, if any, does your global CEO survey have with the current administration?
Well, let me maybe start off with a little broader response to that. I will tell you, when we released the CEO survey results at Davos in January, it gets a significant amount of attention. Not only from the participants in Davos, but all around the world. And I can tell you, as I travel and meet with different people from various governments, et cetera, it is a topic that gets a lot of attention. I do wish our friends in Washington would take a little bit more interest in the survey. They certainly have access to it, but I'll leave it to all in this room to evaluate on their own whether or not they think they're listening to it.
This is somewhat related. Has PwC been commissioned by any of their clients to calculate the financial impact on their companies of the cost of Obamacare?
You know, it's an interesting question. We do have spent a fair amount of our efforts, you know, going through the cost. And there's, I think it has to depend most definitely on, you know, the size of the company, how they're, you know, planning to adapt, you know, the new rules and the regulations. That information is being fed into different parts of Washington, as you might imagine. I know there's a lot of other organizations that are doing something similar, and I think it's getting a fair amount of attention. So it is an area that we're very much focused on.
Do U.S. CEOs strongly support comprehensive immigration reform, tax reform, and entitlement reform? What is the most important educational reform?
Wow. How much time do we have on that one? You know, I think when you talk about immigration, I think it really comes back to, you know, almost an issue around what industry are you really referencing to. So I don't think there's one answer, Bob, on that point. But when you step back and you think about different industries have different challenges in terms of the talent agenda, and I think that's one of the reasons why there's sort of a mixed message coming out of Washington on immigration reform. I will tell you, in the case of taxes, this is an area that is getting an incredible amount of support from across business in general. I think there's a real acknowledgement that reform does have to take place. Again, as with any kind of significant change in the tax rules and regulations, there's going to be winners and losers, which is a big part of the debate and conversation. But I do think, certainly at PwC, we believe, you know, the tax system that's in place today is clearly dated. It's not responsive to the environment that we're all dealing with. When you think about many of these rules, regulations were put in place when we were very much driven by a manufacturing environment. Today, high technology, intellectual capital, different ways to, you know, transfer knowledge and expertise. Clearly, the tax code system needs a major change, overhaul, and hopefully the conversations that have really started in the last couple of weeks will at least get that debate moving in the right direction.
Business ethics are not the same in Europe, South America, and other countries outside the United States. How do you operate in those areas without violating the rules and regulations of the United States?
Well, again, it is a complex issue, as you can imagine. I mean, just coming from India, for example, you know, business practices, what's acceptable there, very different than what we would say would be acceptable in the developed part of the world.
And that is a real factor that we continually focus on. I think I mentioned to some of you earlier today, in the case of India, just as an example, PwC India is about 30% audit, 30% tax, and the remainder consulting. We're very selective in who we do business with, making sure that their business ethics of those companies are consistent with how we'd expect a firm like PwC to conduct our affairs there. So we're very selective. We work with the governments in those markets, spend a lot of time with them trying to point out where their practices are not necessarily competitive with other parts of the world, what they have to do, to either deal with new rules, new regulations, business practices, et cetera. And over time, we certainly believe at PwC anyways, that those markets will have to be, reformed to in order to effectively compete with, other markets around the world, because as we all know, investors are going to look at risk and reward returns, and they'll evaluate where they want to make investments for the longer term. So it's a process that it will take time, but it's certainly one that we're very much focused on from a PwC standpoint.
How does Dodd-Frank influence the way corporate America does business?
Well, I think Dodd-Frank is one of those rules, regulations that many would say is certainly adding to, the cost of business, cost of compliance. As probably many in this room know, many of the detailed rules associated with Dodd-Frank have yet to be really written, so it's creating all kinds of uncertainty, concerns, and I think that's holding back, growth. I think it's holding back investments. I think it's fair to say until the rules of the road are known, one way or another, not debating which way they should go, until the rules are really clear, business is going to act in a very cautious way until they have that kind of clarity. And I think Dodd-Frank is just one example of that. I think there's many others in other industry sectors as well. And I think that's really what business is saying. Give us the rules. Tell us how to do these. How do we really conduct ourselves? And then they can make decisions about levels of investment and how they want to go forward. There's some that would say because of that lack of clarity with the various rules and regulations that are out there, just in the United States, it's probably costing this economy maybe a point of real growth. And you could probably debate that number, but it's probably something order of magnitude of that. And so I think it's absolutely clear that the sooner these kinds of issues can be resolved, the more clarity it's going to provide the business to get on with their job of really growing the economy and focusing on the future.
Here's one that might be better for Solomon. With overregulation being business's biggest concern, how do you create a balance to get the corporations to do the right thing with respect to pollution, safety of personnel, et cetera?
It's a great issue, and I would say my perspective on this one is when you look to other parts of the world, they clearly are moving much more aggressively on dealing with environmental or sustainable kinds of issues. I think the U.S. has been slow to move in that direction. It's now starting to pick up, but I do think the point I tried to make earlier around what does a company stand for, its purpose, and having transparency around that is going to be critical for long-term success. And we see it, quite frankly, not just in terms of the business, but we see it in terms of the people that are joining organizations today. They want to join an organization that has a clear purpose, that has a clear sense of direction, that's much broader than just business and or short-term profits. And so I think this will be an absolute critical issue, I think, in the years to come, about the ability to not only attract talent, but also retain talent. And I think it's an area that the U.S. has to do more on, quite frankly.
Could you characterize the difference between the challenges American companies face in doing business in China and India?
I think there are some real differences. Let me talk about the similarities first. I think when you have a company that is investing in either India or China today, I think many are very concerned about how they actually control their intellectual capital, how they really control the technology, and make sure that there's rule of law governing, you know, that as to really protect the investments that are being made. I think today in China, with the new leadership that has been in place for now over a year, there is a real focus and commitment of that administration to really deal with corruption. And there's been some very, very high-profile cases cited in the last 12 months to really demonstrate that the Chinese government is very, very, very focused on that issue. Again, I think trying to give confidence to investors that you know, things are beginning to change. I would say in the case of India, there's an upcoming election there that will take place here in May of this year, and that's one of the critical issues I think that has to be dealt with. Many people believe, for example, the growth rates that you're seeing in China today at about 7.5%, the growth rate you're seeing in India at 5%, that the India economy has at least the potential to grow at 7-8% a year, and what's holding them back is the issues around regulation, lack of clarity, rule of law, how to do business practices, corruption. I think that's one of the critical issues that if India doesn't necessarily get right, they will fall further and further behind and not reach the potential that maybe an economy like China is clearly focused on. So I think there's similarities and I think there's differences.
What are the chances of another Enron fooling the accountants?
Anything's possible. You know, it's interesting. Whenever we collectively read about sort of a high-profile business failure, one that you know is clearly driven by you know high levels of you know commitment by senior leadership to commit fraud, you know. If there's an intent and a will to really fool accountants, investors, that'll happen. That's the reality. And over time, as we all know, sooner or later, it comes to the forefront because sooner or later, all frauds have to result in, you know, where's the cash? Where's the cash in the bank? So sooner or later, it gets figured out. So it's a question of timing more than anything else. You know, do I think coming out of Enron with many of the new rules, regulations that have been put in place here in the United States, clearly designed to get more accountability, more commitment, more, you know, acknowledgement of the roles and responsibilities of boards of directors, CEOs, CFOs, disclosures, et cetera, I think there's been a lot of changes taking place. So while you can never say never, you know, I think in a place like the United States where business practices, by and large, you know, are fairly good, I think it's not as likely. I would say, however, for all the high-profile failures that we can all cite, and there's many, you know, time and time again, there's a lot of companies out there doing the right thing every single day that don't necessarily get, you know, the attention that they otherwise should. We always focus on the exceptions versus the good that really is taking place.
We have time for answers for one more question. Did you count the votes for the Oscars?
PricewaterhouseCoopers has been doing the Oscars for 77 years, so the answer is yes, and we've never had a bad count yet, I might add.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thanks.
Good. Well done. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Go ahead. Go ahead.